Okay, my apologies for the late start, but it's not just a long pizza. Hopefully we finished it regardless. A pizza chayesara that hopefully will get us to think a little bit, as usually is the case with Rav Dessler. All right, the title of the piece is Eliezer and Negiyosot. Eliezer and his Negiyos, his biases. All right, Amru Chazal, Zechon Avraham, Chazal tell us, Yafa sichasen shal avdei avos, yosim yitarasen shal banim. The sichasa, which means the seemingly idle talk of the avdei avos, not of the avos, but the avdei avos, of the slaves, of the servants of the avos, is more special than the Torah that is that of the children, of the descendants of Klal Yisrael. Shai parashasa shal Eliezer, the parasha of Eliezer, Shnayim Shlosha Dafin Hiyamura, is said in two or three pages or columns. V'hasheretz kula meribu hamikru. When it comes to halachas, it's some of Tahara, Shrats and other things, we learn it all out of drashos. In other words, when it comes to very important halachos, they are learned from inferences, from extra word, an extra letter. They have to extract the halachos through the methodology of Torah Shabbat Peh. Whereas the story of Eliezer runs to pages. That's a chazal. There is Eliezer's instructions from Avram and Eliezer's story by the Be'er and the way he retells the story when it comes to Rivka's house, to Besuel. But Boren, it's clear, Shekamali Mudim Gedolim, that many important lessons, Yotin Parsha Seinu, come out of our Parsha, Shal Eliezer. In Indaying Be'inyan, let's take a look. Let's analyze the matter. Ulai is galon a mitzas min a mitzas. Maybe we'll get a bit, a little whiff. May oros hagdolam atunimba from the great lights that are hidden in it. So he's telling us that there's more to the story than meets the eye. There are always lessons to be learned. He makes it very clear that he doesn't expect it to be an exhaustive discussion of what there is to learn from the story of Eliezer, but there's got to be a reason why the Torah tells us this story in such great detail. And there have to be things that it's possible for us to learn from it. Otherwise, there's no point. So let's see. Kishemisaper Eliezer et samaoros l'shnei lovin abisuel. When Eliezer shares the story of how he met Rivka at the well, and he shares the lovin abisuel, esh the liros, you can see kamashinuyim Misipur Shala Torah Gdosha Alamaura Sahin. You can see numerous changes, differences between the story as it unfolded, as the Torah describes it, and as Eliezer describes it afterwards to Love Nebetsuel. Lamasha, for example. Kishasipalem is Mashadibirim Avram Avinu. When Eliezer relates what he spoke to, or how he spoke to Avram Avinu, Om Eliezer says, and I said to my master, maybe the woman won't want to follow me, won't want to come back to marry Yitzchak. But he omits or leaves out the end of his words, Hashiv Ashiv Es Bincha, shall I bring your son back? So he leaves something out over there. Furthermore, it says, Ulai Male, this is very important, Rashi points this out, that it says over there, in when Eliezer tells the story over, it says, Ulai, Alevav Lamed, perhaps, Bekan, I confused that. When it actually happened, he said, Ulai. That was when he told Avram, Ulai, perhaps the woman will not want to come with me. What do I do then? The word Ulai is written Alevav Lamed Yud, which is the full spelling of the word Ulai. Bekan b'sipur shel Eliezer, when it says it, the word Ulai in the story, when he relates the story to Lavan and Besuel, it's written with Alevav, Alef Lamed Yud. The Vav is left out. Chaser, it's missing. Yidua Midrash Chazal, and we know very well the Midrash regarding this, Chazal tell us, that Bas Haisalo L'Eliezer, Eliezer had a daughter. V'yimachazer Limso Ila, Sheyomalo Avram, he was looking for an excuse so that Avram would tell him, Asiya Bito, the Yitzchak should marry his daughter. So when he was there talking to Avram in real time, and the story was happening, when Avram was giving instructions, Eliezer says, well, what happens if she doesn't want to come back with me? Then maybe what he was hoping was that Avram would say, okay, then she'll marry your daughter. He'll marry your daughter. He's going to marry your daughter, right? So that's what the word ulai that is out of vav, because the word ulai could also be read as elai. Elai means to me, right? Achzorchim, but so that's Chazal, all right? Achzorchim, you have to understand. Lama viat Torah is a remez as zebesach lipush Eliezer lo v'pama rishona. Why is the hint to Eliezer's vested interest over here only hinted to in when he tells a story to Besuel, but it's not hinted to when the story is actually happening? Right? Did we follow that? When the story is actually happening, when Eliezer being to Avram, it says Ulai. It doesn't say Eli. It says Ulai. When he's telling over the story, suddenly it says Eli without a vav. It's pronounced Ulai when you read the Torah, but there's a hint of the idea that Eliezer had his own interest in mind. He was interested in the shidduch for his daughter. So why, Rav Dessel asks, is this only alluded to when he's telling the story and not alluded to when it's actually happening? Any thoughts on that? Avram knew what was happening. He certainly did. He certainly did. He understood what was going on. All right. So that's fine, but then doesn't mean it wasn't going on. In other words, Eliezer was still looking after his daughter, and Avram was on to him, and that may very well be possible, but could have said a lie to show us that Eliezer really had something else in mind. All right, let's see. The chain is so, and so to the eshal, osav amar bas mi'at, v'asim anezim alapa, because of Rashi's, when Eliezer said, and I would ask her, as he said, I would ask her, whose daughter are you, right? Vasama Nezamalapa, and I'll put the nose ring on her. The Kutz of Rashi says, Shina Haseda, he deviated from the order in which things happened. Sharihu Tchila Nasan Vachashal. Eliezer, in fact, first gave her the jewelry and then asked her, whose daughter are you? And when he told the story over, he said, at first he asked him, then gave her the jewelry. El Shaloi Tsu Bidvarav, they shouldn't chop him at this silly sequence of events in terms of his behavior. You're going to say, Hech Nesatala, how do you give her jewelry? But you don't know who she is. How could you have done that? So therefore, he hid that fact by changing the story and by saying that he first asked who she is and then gave her the jewelry, when in fact he gave her the jewelry before he knew who she was. So Kan Ratasa Torah Gdor Shalom Deinu, Pasha B'Torah Hanagiyas. What the Torah wants to teach us here is a parasha, a lesson in the Torah Hanagiyas, in the Torah of biases. Yeah, that's the word I used before, right? The Torah biases, the world of bias. Kol Adam Yesh Lo Gvul L'Riyaso Ativis. Every person has a gvul, a limit to his natural eyesight. Veina ayin tofet eyesight, his natural eyesight. Veina ayin tofeset mashimichutz l'chatzi igol shalsedei haria. The eye cannot see what is outside of the 180 degrees. I guess when you include peripheral vision, whatever sedei haria, the field of vision. Right, he's translating that from the English word. The field of vision, whatever your field of vision is, you can't see what's outside of that. And misha inav chaloshos, one who has weak eyes. And he needs glasses. Yoser, his field of vision is more limited. Mizeshu bar, if someone has good eyesight. That's the way it is with our physical eyesight. Kamo kein hadavar b'ruchnius. The matter is similar when it comes to ruchnius. Ein adam yochel liras or birur, v'lamad ala emes. A person can't truly see with clarity. Allow it all emes and to totally get to the emes of the truth. except in that field, in that area, where his madriga reaches. The chusmi say, and yachalur is b'shamar, but he can't see beyond that. Mishan, let me elaborate a little bit, and then we'll try to get what he's saying. Mishan nimsev madriga tachtona, someone who's on a lower level, ein yachal hazik dvar mashiach al madriga yos gevoah, cannot see, cannot fathom things that are on a higher level. Yidvar elu misagim rak ba'osa madriga, because those higher level things could only be understood when you are on that higher level. But madriga nemuchalimena, and when you're on a lower level, yevshalamod alamitasam b'shemofin, you cannot understand what, really understand them, because you're not there yet. Lamasha, for example, Baal Kocha Netila, right, going back to Dessler's world of Netila and Nesina, Kocha Netila, Kocha Nesina, that the world is divided between givers and takers, right? Of Dessler's famous discussion in Kutuz and Chesed that we learned a while back, that there are givers and there are takers. And at any given point in time, we're activating either our giving side or our taking side. And in general, a person will ultimately be defined either as a giver or a taker. So, Baal Koch HaNetila, Lo Yasek Es Chesed HaMez Chasek. Someone who's a taker cannot fathom the Chesed of the one who does Chesed. V'yesh Chatoi Sat Tzedikim Shalo Adem HaPashot Einim Esagim Kachatam Kval. Or, similarly, we find that there are sins, and I put them in quotation marks, but I don't know if I should, sins of Tzedikim, that for the simple person, he can't get. What's so terrible about that? What's so terrible about what he did? Is regarding this, that the great Bar Musa of Simcha Zitzel, the altar, explained, the idea that we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medagdik, he judges his chasidim, chasidav, that means his strict followers, the ones that are closest to him, b'chut hasara, with much more exacting standards than anybody else. Now, we would ask, well, that doesn't seem fair, and you would expect that if you close to Hashem, Hashem just kind of, you know, take a little easy on you. So he explains, Kimash Nira Lonu Kedavar Tafel Vidak Chut Asara, something that appears to us like Kedavar Dak, like something very, very minor, Chut Asara, like a hair's breadth, like it's no big deal. Nira B'Madrega Sassadikim Kavon Pleli, the Madrega Sassadikim is an awesome sin. Balkain, therefore, they are bitterly punished for it. So what he's saying here is that, first of all, the idea that someone who's on a lower level cannot understand what's going on at the higher level. Elsewhere we talked about this, and I kind of alluded to this other discussion of Dessler about this. I alluded to this on Shabbos, when Rav Dessler asks that if you're on the, how are you even supposed to strive for that higher level if you can't see it? If you can't see it, how are you supposed to drive something you can't even see? So he gave examples that time of Amuna. What does it mean to be imam? What does it mean to be a believer? Right? So you go to one person and you say, do you believe in God? And he says, yes. Can you demonstrate what you mean by you believe in God? Well, every time I'm in trouble, every time I have problems, it turns straight to Hashem. It turns straight to God. I stop praying. So I'm a religious man. I believe in God. Right? Does he daven Hashem daily? No. Does he thank Hashem for the good of his life? No. But he sincerely sees himself as someone who's a ma'amin, right? He doesn't see himself as someone who's a kofer. He sees himself as a ma'amin, right? On the next level, you have, you know, the person who davens three times a day. And on the next level, you have the person who is someone who always feels Hashem's presence in his life. When you go to those higher levels, anyone who's in a high level looks at the person at the lower level. You call that believing Hashem? Where's your Emunah Hashem? Why do you talk to Hashem on a regular basis? Or the person in the highest madriga, where he sees Hashem everywhere. He's talking to Hashem. Hashem is with him every moment of his life. You talk to Hashem when you're in trouble once every 5 years, and you call yourself a mammon? You just don't see Hashem when he's in front of you all the rest of the time? So who's right and who's wrong as far as what the definition of a mammon is? And the answer is, everybody's right on their level. That person at the lowest level, that's the definition of mammon. Try telling about somebody who steals Hashem's life all the time and say, wow, that person's a real tzaddik. I'm a plain old mammon, right? I'm just a regular guy. And on the highest level, the person will say, if I lower myself to speak to Hashem only when I'm in trouble, then I would say that's terrible. That's not a mammon. That's not someone who's living with Hashem in his life. And he'd be right. In other words, if the person that sees Hashem, says Hashem everywhere, only speaks to Hashem when he's in trouble, that's a disaster. Right? That's a chet gadol. So because Baruch Hu will hold him accountable for that sake when he would not hold the person on rung number one accountable for that because he doesn't see that. He doesn't get it. He can't fathom that. But when he can't fathom it, then there are more expectations. You have to live up to that which you understand. And that's why, you know, it's things, the chataim that the Torah speaks about the great people and talks about them as if they did very, very bad things. And then Chazal, quote-unquote, will whitewash it and say what they did was not exactly the way it sounds. So which one is true? And the answer is both are true. Because they didn't do that chait that we would have done if we did that chait. But the Torah labels it as that terrible chait because on their level, that's exactly that, whether it be David HaMelech, whether it be Yudah, whatever chait, Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever chait we're talking about. Imagine the Torah says about Hashem, Moshe and Aaron, Hashem says, Moshe, Yamo Hamantavi, because didn't believe in me. Right? Moshe and Aaron didn't believe in Hashem. Okay, on their level, somehow, they, right, it was a lot of them. Well, so Lefizeh, you say according to this, Lubalanu Halimud, Mishina Seidu Hamasim, Bishipur Shal Yezer. We can now begin to understand the changes in the story that happened in the story of Eliezer. Amunosa Mukesh Eliezer, Bishimchosol HaNation Nasalo, Eliezer's great Amuna, and the simcha that he had for the Nes that happened in finding Rivka, Haim Shigorma, that's a cause. She yasim at smidim ayidei Rivka. They should put the bracelets on Rivka's hands and the rest of the jewelry. B'teres shalom ishpachta before he even asked for the family. Ki b'tuach haya, he was confident. B'lish shum suffik, without any doubt. Ma tia tshuvasa, what her answer is going to be. He knew that her answer was going to be that she's a member of his family. He believed it completely. We have to understand. You know, Eliezer Eved Avram was not your, you know, ordinary Eved Kanani. He was a tremendous tzaddik. And he was deserving of being the loyal servant of Avram. In the end, he couldn't marry Avram's daughter, meaning his daughter cannot marry Avram's son, because at the end of the day, Kanan is Aru and Yisrael is Baruch or Shem, you know, it was Baruch and Aru, the cursed one, cannot marry the one who's blessed. And there's a lot of depth to that, and that requires a lot more explanation, and much more than I can even. Then I can really explain properly. But Eliezer himself was, Chazal tell us, was a domestic Eliezer. Dole, that Eliezer was dole umashke mitarosa sharabe lachir, which means dole umashke, he would draw, like from a well. Dole, you draw the water, umashke, give it to drink, but not water, not physical water, but mitarosa sharabe, from the Torah of his master, Lachirim, to others. Eliezer would take the Torah of Avram and teach it to others. So Eliezer was in a tremendous Hamadrega. So when he's by that well, he understands, as soon as he sees what's happening over here, he gets it. He got the whole picture. He knows that Rivka is meant to be the one, that Rivka, that as soon as he asks her who she is, he'll find out she's from Avram's family, and she's an extended family, and she's Roy, she's the one who Yitzchak should marry. And therefore he gave her the jewelry, even before he even asked her any questions, because he had total betachon in the situation. However, when he starts telling the story to people like Besuel and Lavan, he understood with his wisdom. She he can't tell them the story the way it happened. On their level, they cannot understand Amun and Betachon. Ubenayim Kazoy Chashid. It seems like a totally odd thing. Kimashuga or Kimitateya, like someone's crazy and confused. Kimisha, you know, what normal person that would say gives jewelry to a complete strange girl, all that expensive jewelry, without even knowing who she is? Kimisha Gvuriyasum at Sumtsum, I day Avasagashmias. Someone who's limited in what they can perceive. Because the love of Gashmias, will never be able to understand, at least at that point in their lives, will not be able to understand the truth of much higher level. And that's why things have to be packaged differently. it's not a falsehood to package it differently. It's you speak to people in a way that they can relate to it. And, you know, in Kiev all the time, you're not going to be able to, you know, you tell people about Shabbos, and you speak about Shabbos is a wonderful opportunity to disconnect from all of the craziness that technology dumps on us, that we can't ever have any time for ourselves and so on, and we have time with our families. So you tell them Shabbos is a great time to spend with your family. And that's true. But is that what Shabbos really is? Shabbos is so much more than that. Right? Shabbos is infinitely greater than that. Shabbos is a chance to connect to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Shabbos is a chance to elevate your ruchnis. Shabbos is a chance to recharge your neshama. And with Shabbos, we can go on and on. And even then, we don't really get what Shabbos is. It's almost an even higher level is beyond that. So, you know, even we'll say, you know, TGIF, and, you know, and I will say, I couldn't live without Shabbos. Shabbos is amazing because I fall apart without Shabbos. And that's great. But when you look at Gedol Yisrael, spend that whole Friday night and the whole Shabbos afternoon learning Torah, then you say, well, okay, well, you know, what happened to their rest, okay? But for them, that's what Shabbos is, and they wouldn't know how to spend Shabbos any other way. So it's understood that people relate to things based on the level that they're on, and that's how they perceive it, and that's where you have to speak to them. You have to speak to them in their language. Just like the Torah itself speaks to us in our own language and uses metaphors, human metaphors, to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, different Torah, but so many others. The Torah uses the language of men because that's the level that we're on, and that's what we can grasp. The Kachwa Davar, and that's the way it is. The Chomish Yesh Lanikiyas. Anyone who has a bias. Be'inin asher shom shorer senegia, regarding the matter where the bias is placed, enenu yachol umesuga liros esem, as it can't see the truth. Barak besur hanegia, only when the bias is removed, yuchalam and alamitas dvarim can see things with clarity. You know, sometimes this happens to us if we have those moments of clarity that follow those moments of confusion, where we are vested, we have a vested interest in something, and we know that when we have a vested interest in something, that we find all kinds of reasons to argue that position. And it comes in all kinds of situations. For example, someone's contemplating whether they should stay in the current job or change jobs, right? Or stay in the current location or change location. I'm not talking about any ruchnis now. I'm talking about just having a bias. So there's a natural inclination to want to stay put. Because moving is hard, it's difficult, it's uprooting yourself and so on. Changing jobs is difficult, it's uprooting yourself from one job to another. So it's very, very difficult to see the situation with clarity because we constantly come up with arguments that are consistent with our path of least resistance. Okay? Then, if something happens, you know, if in fact we were supposed to make the change, we made the change, we look back and say, how could they have ever thought that it should make the change? That was the silliest thing ever. So why are we able to do that now? Because once you made the move, we no longer have the bias, and now we can see things with clarity, which we didn't have before. So there are all kinds of situations where that may be the case. It could be someone's in a relationship. You know, people are dating. And, you know, for some reason, they're very invested in this relationship, but even though it's not good for them. And then, you know, so something happens, and they move on from that. They look back and they say, well, of course that would have been not a good thing for me, right? So, v'chein ha'davar b'chomish yesh negiyas, third line. V'alkein, therefore, k'shishbiya Avram vina to Eliezer. When Hashem gave Avram the responsibility with a shavua to Eliezer, sh'liyikach ish sh'liyitzchah b'nos Kanan, that he won't find a wife for Yitzchah from the daughters of Kanan. Hey, she said, Ulay lo sova isha lecha sacharai. Maybe she won't want to come with me. Hashiv Hashiv is bilcha, then she'll bring your son back and maybe have him marry a Kanani like what was he thinking? Like my daughter, right? He didn't say that. So what did it say over there? It says Ulay Malay. It says Ulay doesn't say a lie that it's for me, that maybe it should be for my family, maybe he should marry into my family. But just says Ulay in with the purity of intentions that he, on the conscious level, had at that time. Because at that time, at Dayan Hasavot Tikva, he still had hope. Lebita for his own daughter, He couldn't perceive his bias. The sovereign, he thought, he convinced himself that he's just trying to think about all the angles of this whole story, how it's going to unfold. He wasn't thinking about his daughter. He just was innocently asking, should I bring your son back here? He wasn't thinking. He didn't realize at that time that this is all about him and his daughter. We are amazing at operating on different levels. We have the conscious level and the subconscious level and the denial that we go through, and we can convince ourselves that our motives are completely pure. Avram, I'm just asking, what happens if the girl doesn't want to come with him? Maybe I should bring Yitzchak back here and I'll marry somebody local. Right? Completely innocently, he was convinced that's what he was thinking. When he told the story to Besuel, he, Eliezer, the Madrega that he was on, he realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already chosen a wife for Yitzchak. That Rivka would be Yitzchak's wife. So at that point, there was no me anymore. There's nothing to think about. His hopes were completely dashed. Now, on the one hand, that could be very depressing. But on the other hand, it was the opportunity to have a moment of clarity. He saw that Yitzchak had already been chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He no longer had any hope that his daughter would marry Yitzchak. So initially, when he thought his daughter may marry Yitzchak, he had a reason to bury that thought and to convince himself that it was not about his daughter. But now that he knew that his daughter can't marry Yitzchak, he can look back and see, he can unbury the thought that he had buried when he's speaking to Avram and allow it to flow to the from the subconscious to the conscious, and to realize what it was all about. The male of Bala Negiyasa, because at this point his Negiyas, his bias is gone, because there's nothing to talk about. Yitzchak already spoken for, it's going to be Rivka. Vehikiris Emes, he recognized the truth. Now he recognizes the truth not only by who Yitzchak is to marry, but he recognizes the truth about himself. Shekol She'loso Kodemes, Hoytim Sadha Negiyav Ovad. That his whole initial question was not to find out to what. It was not because he had Avram and Yitzchak's best interests in mind. It was all about trying to lead things in the direction where Avram should consider his daughter as a potential daughter-in-law. The Sheikh of therefore, the Ratzel Levato She'elasto Hamatais, told us the Yaso, Odas Hashavas Yitzchak, Apadan Aram. So therefore, he realized now that he did not want to express She'elasto Hamatais, his misleading question, which is told us Negiyaso, which is a result of his bias, Odos Hashavas Yitzchak Padan Aram, regarding perhaps bringing Yitzchak back to Padan Aram, can his baro lo, because it was clear to him Shalom Azos Elikidei Lachatzos on Negiyaso. He realized now that the whole thing was just a cover-up for his own bias. Balkein Devarom Zat Torah Akshav Eli Chasek says, and now when Eliezer is telling the story over, and he sees it with clarity, and he understands what was driving him, so now is the time of the Torah to tell us that the word ulai can also be spelled elai. Ki atan is galsan egiyaso v'ikur emes. Now Eliezer himself exposed his own bias and recognized the truth. This is a very, very beautiful pshat and an answer to a very powerful question. Why the ulai is spelled ulai with a vav initially and spelled with an elai afterwards. And Rav Dessler speaks about this in other areas as well, this idea of negius. You know, someone asks a shayla, right, of a rav. Very, very rarely, does someone, after the rav says, yes, you can do that. No, am I allowed to do this? When the rav says you can do that, will the person bring up arguments against that? But it will certainly happen not so rarely when the Rav says no, that the person will say, well, what about this and what about that? Right? That maybe you want to consider this, maybe you want to consider that. The yes, you run away like a hot potato, okay? You run away, right? Quit while you're ahead. You got with the answer, right? So, which really makes it very difficult to ask shalos in the first place, because you have to ask a shalos in a way that presents all of the issues in advance. But Dessler writes, he says that, you know, he just uses as an example, play chess on Shabbos, which, you know, the issue is not really, I'll play chess, people do play chess on Shabbos. But he says if someone has or asks a shalos, am I allowed to play chess on Shabbos? He already has now disqualified himself for dealing with the issue, because no one asks if they can play chess on Shabbos unless they want to play chess on Shabbos, right? So if that's what you want, you now have a bias, right? And it may be difficult to recognize it at the time to say, well, the way you're asking the question, and we all know sometimes it depends on how the question is asked, and it's even it's actually a much bigger deal when you're asking advice about something. You can ask a shayla, you know, the fact, and if the rav is competent, then he'll make sure to probe to make sure that he gets all the facts that he needs in order to give a psak. But when you're giving advice, you know, the idea of ein lo dayin el mashein evros, right? A dayin can only go by what he sees. So if you're going to someone for an etza, and you're telling him the story, then the person you're going to only knows whatever you tell them. You know, when unfortunately there's shalom bayis issues, any rov with a little bit of experience knows that if he hears one spouse complain about another spouse, he knows nothing. Right? All he knows is one person's perspective, but he does not know what the real story is. And it's amazing whether it's shalom bayis or whether it's two people are having a dispute with each other. It's amazing how when you can speak to two people separately about the same story, you get two completely different stories. I don't mean the facts are different, but the spin is completely different. Take a look at what's happening today, and maybe you shouldn't take a look, don't waste your time, but what's happening in the impeachment hearings in Congress. Why is it that all the Democrats see that the president did something terrible, and all the Republicans, it's obvious to them that the president did anything wrong? It just happens to be that they're all Democrats and they're all Republicans. Does that make any sense whatsoever? It makes no sense. There's no quest for the truth. But really, everyone has a bias, everyone has an agenda, and they're spinning it in a way that promotes their agenda. So what's the answer really? How do you decide the things that are of import, whether halacha, whether tashkafa, how can we ever trust ourselves? It's very, very challenging, very difficult to probe ourselves to the point we're going to be really, really honest with ourselves. Because in this story, Eliezer certainly was doing his best to be honest with himself as well. And yet, he was being completely dishonest. He didn't fool Avram. I think you're right. Avram was on to him. But he sure fooled himself. You sure that's the irony? He didn't fool. And by the way, that's very often the case where everybody else could see how you're fooling yourself, and the only one who can't see it is you yourself. We ourselves can't see it. Why? Because when you're in the story, you're in the thick of it, you can't see it. And we may have had situations in our own lives where we got into fights with people, we got into arguments with people, and we're so convinced that we were right. And then it takes us sometimes years to look back and say, oh, you know, I was not acting appropriately, and I didn't see the other person's side, and I should have acted differently, and I may have actually been wrong. It could take years for us to face up to that. So when Rav Dessler speaks about this in other places, but he says the only answer is to learn Musser. That's what he says. There is no Musser. Because what's the idea of Musser? Do you know what Musser is? What's Musser? Well, what does it mean to learn Musser? So in the class, what? Okay, it humbles you. So humility is certainly one part of it. Certainly in the school in the Vardic, where you become a garnet, you become a nothing. The goal of Musser is to go through the most gut-wrenching self-analysis, to get ourselves to be really, really honest with ourselves. Rav Yisrael Salanter, it is said, developed or expressed in his writings the idea of the subconscious around the same time as Freud did. But it's coming from a completely different vantage point. You say that there are other things that are driving us, you know, I'm not an expert to be able to speak about these things, but in Freudian psychology, It takes guardians of conscience. You can't control them, and that's what's driving you. And Nebuch, you're a prisoner of that. But in Rishos Solanda's world, no, that's your responsibility. It's to get a grip on yourself. It's to probe yourself and probe over and over and over again so you get to know what's going on really inside of you so you can get the clarity that you need. Right? In the meantime, probably what we have to do is to go to somebody else to help us get clarity when we're dealing with a challenging issue, because we have all the stuff that's going on inside of us. So we're going to end a little bit early, but just to wrap it up, that we get these are two stories or two aspects of people, two examples of people who cannot really see things with clarity. One was Lavan and Bethuel, who cannot really perceive the clarity, which would be clear to us, Baruch Hashem, that Hashgach of a Gezbroch has chosen a wife for a husband for Yitzchak and wife for Rivka. I mean, a wife for Yitzchak and a husband for Rivka. That was so clear that it made perfect sense to give the jewelry in advance. They couldn't see that. And we have the story of Eliezer, that Eliezer couldn't see things with clarity while he was in the midst of his own story. And the challenge that we have to recognize we're constantly facing when we're dealing with, like I said, halacha issues or hashkafa issues, to do the best that we can under circumstances to probe ourselves to see what's really driving us. And maybe it's a good idea every time we're asking a shayla about something, and even more importantly, perhaps every time we're getting into an argument with somebody else, to try to probe ourselves. Why am I so bothered by this? Is this really about the right and wrong, or did somebody push my buttons in a way that's getting me to act irrationally or to act inappropriately or to make a bigger deal that something doesn't need to be made out of it? And if we find that we can't do it, then sometimes you go to somebody else and say, you know what? Am I right? Am I wrong? Let me tell you the story. And even then, you're challenged to tell the story the way it really is and to really put in all the pieces, and sometimes you have to overcompensate in order to make that so that we can overcome the challenge that the gift poses to us in all the situations that it does. Right. Thank you for coming.